Hey, yo, this is Tom Wopat. I used to be Luke Duke back when we were all children. You're listening to Verbal Shenanigans.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, his shenanigans are cruel and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. Another week, another endeavor, another story for you that should add richness and sweetness to your life. That is the Verbal Shenanigans podcast. That's what we do. We bring wellness to people's lives. I am Scott. That is Mike down there. Mike, hello.
How's it going, Scott? It's good to know that I am the cure for the ailments of people's lives. You know, I feel even more accomplished than I did last week, which is kind of hard to do if you can tell by my tone.
Nice. So you are now, not only do you have legions of fans that await you at most locations, now you're curing illnesses.
Yep.
Please describe this God complex you're developing.
Well, you know, I mean, as days went along, I just realized how amazing everything is when I'm involved with it. So I just say to myself, you know, every day I expect you're welcome from the world, you know?
Wow.
It's just
so,
like,
so now,
the second my eyes open, I'm like, I'm waiting.
So let me get this straight. Now that you're there, you have fans that you want kissing your feet, essentially. You're curing them of diseases, and now you want welcomes from them. You want praise and you want something back from them.
I mean, have you heard some of my contributions lately, Scott? I mean, I think I warrant some. I mean, come on.
What exactly do you think? What contributions do you think lately have really put you into this stratosphere you find yourself?
Well, I mean, there was that time where I told you I got up and went to work. I mean, that's pretty interesting.
And they found that body.
Yeah. I talked about dogs. I mean,
you did.
Then the other time we talked about dogs. You know, I don't have to justify what I am, Scott. I just am what I am. And, you know, I know what I'm worth. And it's worth your welcome on a constant basis.
I mean, yesterday we were having a conversation via a text message while the game was on. You know, we were talking about possible guests we might get on. And, like, you know, you're a big fan of the Dukes of Hazzard. It's kind of been a running joke, if you will, on the show. We had Bo Duke, John Schneider, on the show, which was my gift to you, which I was still amazed how that worked out. It was right before the last show before you left, right?
Down to Georgia. It was a farewell show.
And at that time, we weren't exactly sure we would be able to make this work as seamless as it's been. We knew we'd figure it out, but sometimes with things over the internet and things, you know, not in person, it's a bit of a change. But thanks to the information superhighway, we've been able to keep this going for how long have you been in Georgia now?
We're a couple months away from 2 years, my friend.
All right. So we've
March
been,
of 2 years ago.
Yeah, so we've probably done, I don't know, to be on the conservative side, like 80, 90 episodes from Georgia.
Easily, yeah.
So we were having a conversation about John Schneider and, you know, possibly trying to get his counterpart, Tom Wopat, you know, Luke Duke, if you will. And you know, you started saying that I asked you who you thought you were in the Verbal Shenanigans podcast, like what Duke brother you saw yourself as in this role and why. So I don't know. I thought maybe you should share with the audience with your logic, since you got you're telling us about your theories here.
Well, I mean, the way I look at it, Scott. I mean. Okay. Luke Duke kind of was like, if you will, a part of the show was they were trying to aim to be part of a NASCAR team, the two of them. And Luke Duke actually comes off as the crew chief. You know, he's very sound-minded. He's very logical. He ties things together. He kind of gets the group motivated, like a good head coach and everything like that.
Okay. Whereas
Bo Duke was kind of just like the wild card, you know. He was the one behind the wheel. He's the one that's like, I ain't stopping for no Roscoe. Let's keep going, you know. I'd rather jump this river than get pulled over for speeding. I mean, that's how I see my life, you know. Just pure, when you think of Mike Berlew, you think of the wild card. The guy that's just going to be like, I don't know what's going to happen next, but I ain't moving a muscle until this happens.
So you see yourself, in the context of this show, you see yourself as the complete wild card. Like, anything can happen when Berlew's on the mic. Like, anything. The craziness can ensue. You know, it just could be anything could happen.
I wouldn't put an ounce of boundary on me when it comes to that. Like, I could just sit down here and just be like, Scott, I rode a moose yesterday, and it probably did happen. Probably did.
I'm thinking you might have this vision that your life is a lot more exciting than it actually is.
Well, I've been taking some new psychological drugs, and I'm assuming this is reality that I'm currently in.
So you've just been dosing yourself. You're into that, like, psilocybin that people are doing? Like, they're doing, like, slight amounts of mushrooms, like, every day just to keep that, you know, fight off depression, keep a little buzz going all the time.
Well, I saw the movie The Matrix, and the guy took the pill and he went to this whole new world. So I said to myself, all right, so if one pill takes you to this world, what could 10 do for me?
Oh, so you're not even just dabbling in it. You're deep. You're 10, yeah. 10 pills deep.
I'm like, you know what? I can't just go wherever. I'm an explorer. I got to see what's way past this point and just try to bring it back.
Wow. I mean, I'm glad that you see yourself as the Bo Duke of the group. So what does that make me? Does that make me Luke?
I mean, yeah, I think so. I think you're the calm one that it's like, all right, in my notes, I have an introduction. I explain what the purpose of our show is. I will recap previous shows, and then, like, hey, Berlew, what's going on? Wah!
Well, one, I like that you're telling me, you know, you're telling me I'm basically like the quarterback, you know, like I'm kind of calling the plays, drawing them up. But I also like that you think I do any kind of show prep that deep. Like, I say, like, okay, we're going to recap things, or that's certainly not the case, but, you know, I'll take it.
I mean, you're the structure, and I'm the wrecking ball. That's the way I kind of see things. And somehow we build something beautiful every time.
So now you're the wrecking ball. So Mike the wrecking ball Berlew.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I see you more of a boss hog type of the podcast.
So you're saying I'm trying to ruin the podcast?
Exactly.
And, like, take everything for myself. I mean, that's plausible, too, now I said it out loud.
You know, you kind of got that Southern thing going on now, too. Like, I could see you wearing a white suit and, like, a, you know, like a, what do you call that, a 10-gallon hat or whatever the hell he's wearing. So I think it could be a character you could really get into.
I found one thing fascinating as I was, I was on the internet looking through different videos, and they were talk about, I came across this Dukes of Hazzard one where they talked about, apparently, the Sorrel Hodge, who played Boss Hogg, he apparently knew 7 different languages, and they talked about, like, these, they were on set at CBS, and these people came by who were, like, tourists from Japan. And he literally just walked over and just started talking to them in perfect Japanese. Everybody on set thought he was making it up, but apparently he was fluent in Japanese among other languages. So I just, it's kind of hard to capture that scene where he's like wearing the white suit with the 10-gallon hat and just talking like straight Japanese at somebody.
So now you're saying that you come off maybe as the boss hog type, but you're really this highly intellectual being that we don't really know.
Yeah, there's another layer to my Boss Hogness. And it's not just what's in front of you telling Roscoe to go catch them Duke boys. No, I'm multi-flavored, if you will.
We have to be, other than if there is a Dukes of Hazzard podcast out there, which I'm sure there is, we have to be the number one or two podcast that still brings up the Dukes of Hazzard like it's still very current.
I figured to myself, Scotty, 1977, 2019, kind of right next to each other, if you will, as far as like interest on television. So
yeah, I mean, if you look at like a timeline, like 2020 and 1977 over, you know, the history of man, that's only a tiny little space on the timeline.
Yeah, just a little speck right there, and I'm here to say it's not that far away. Listen to my words.
I think
let's talk about Chickasaw County.
I think you should start your own Dukes of Hazzard podcast and see what kind of audience you could find. I really think there's an audience out there.
Now, keep in mind, the first five episodes were recorded down here in Georgia. So there can be some people down here in the boondocks, and I'll just be like, yes, finally!
I'm talking
my language.
I would actually throw it out there that if you really hit it the right way, you'd probably get more listens than we do in the first couple weeks. Because here's our problem.
Wait, Joe Rogan.
Here's our problem, right? It's our blessing and our curse, right? We talk about this all the time. Like, I can never do a one-topic podcast. I couldn't do an MMA podcast, a sports podcast. I couldn't talk to just comedians. Get bored. So this show's kind of evolved to reflect just that. We talk to pretty much anybody and everybody. I think last week we were talking about, you know, what categories have we not hit, and there's very few out there. At least we've touched on some realm of something. I mean, we've talked to an exorcist, for God's sakes. So it's a blessing and curse because people come to our show. They might say, oh, I'm really into this MMA fighter. Who are they interviewing next week? And they're like, God damn it, a cheese carver? Like, so it is our blessing. We're like Joe Rogan light is what I like to call it. We don't have the mass celebrities, but we do have people of all different ilks, if you will. We've had someone on Joe Rogan's podcast. We had Zoltan Istvan, I believe, was on Rogan's podcast at one time. So we do share that. Maybe that's why we come up on podcasts similar to.
I call ourselves the perfect podcast for somebody with ADHD. Like, you start listening to this, it's like, I need something else. Just hit the next button, and then it's like, oh my God, totally different. All right, I'm sick of this. What the hell? A Pokemon stick guy? What?
it's completely all over the map, and that's kind of the way we like it, because we'll be talking about our lives one day, and the next day we'll be doing a tournament where you try to figure out which dead guy you'd like to bring back. So it's I don't know, we're kind of like a radio show that's a podcast, if you will. If you're just tuning in, I know that was a long intro, and you're probably like, what the hell are these guys talking about right now? But we are a weekly podcast. If you're just tuning in, Mike is down in Georgia. I'm here in beautiful, beautiful, scenic New Jersey, and and we put out a weekly podcast. And that's kind of we just kind of summed it up for you. We've had everyone from John Schneider, who is Bo Duke, to John Walsh from America's Most Wanted, to you name it, lots of athletes, things like that. But so welcome to the show, everybody, and enjoy your listening pleasure. As you can see, Bro has, he's slowly developed this complex that you know what, this is also kind of like a psychiatric evaluation, this show, over time. Really, it's pretty much like talking to your therapist once a week. Like, I'm really not talking to you because I enjoy talking to you, I'm actually just slowly trying to pull out the maniacal parts in your psyche, you know?
Well, I mean, that would explain why it's state demanded that I do the podcast every week. Like, in order to get to Georgia, they're like, are you still talking with Scott? I'm like, no, I stopped doing the show. They're like, you're not Pete State material, boy. You're going to stop that.
Is that why I have to keep signing those papers that come in the mail to, like, check off your hours?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. You had to highlight specific things I saw in my visions of my future. You know, stuff that you can get ready for. So when the one day happens, the Georgia State Trooper's like, no, seriously, we had this trampoline for a reason. He thinks he can fly for some reason, but we're ready.
On episode 276, he admitted he takes lots of psychedelic drugs. He broke his probation.
He literally thought he was in the Matrix somehow.
Yeah, so if you're tuning in, that's Mike there. That Mike is a conundrum wrapped up in an enigma, wrapped up in I don't know. Mike. That's all I could explain to you. You are the wild card of the podcast, Berlo, just like you've always wanted to be.
Imagine a tortilla filled with every kind of thing you find at Moe's. That is Michael Berlo in a nutshell. And you'll find some other stuff you won't appreciate either. Like, if you take a bite into a burrito and there's thumbtacks in there, that's a Berlo burrito.
I like how you basically have rolled your life into a tortilla. Great analogy. Great analogy. But, all right.
That's why they bring me in here.
All right, Berlo. So, I mean, I've been kind of baiting you here. I've been kind of baiting you in this conversation because, you know.
Don't toy with my emotions. I'm very sensitive.
So, we've been talking about this Dukes of Hazzard thing. It's at least had to appear on the show 20 plus times over the years. And years ago, It was destiny. It was destiny. You were leaving, and the last episode I was able to get John Snyder on, which was Bo Duke, right? But today we complete that puzzle piece. Okay, we have the yin to the yang, Berlo. We have the the salt to the pepper. We got Luke Duke coming on the show.
I'm sorry, I'm getting a little emotional here, Scott.
Are you getting misty?
My childhood is flashing before my eyes, and I'm really fat and get beat up a lot, but still I'm happy watching the Dukes at this time, so I'm this is an amazing moment for me.
The one and only Tom Wopat, a.k.a. Luke Duke, coming on the podcast here. Again, it was kind of... I think years ago I had tried to get Tom on right around when I was trying to get Luke on. John on, and never received anything or whatnot, and kind of went back. I don't even know how this really happened. We kind of some tweeting and some things like that, and we're able to get Tom on. So Berlo, this is like my second present to you. The first present, my presence. Okay. Second present, mm-hmm. John Snyder. And really, this is the third present, Tom Wopat.
Yeah, so I guess I'm down one, because even though we didn't get the interview, I did get you to talk to Sean Kemp on the phone. And that was my... And let's add something to it. That was my first tweet ever on our account. So that's pretty epic.
We've been
it's like winning the Super Bowl on your first pass ever.
I've been trying ever since to get him back. I did have a conversation with him on the phone, though. That is proven. Well, it's not proven because I can't prove it, but I did talk to him for about, I don't know, 6-7 minutes or something like that. And he was scheduled, and he did say he was coming on, but we failed miserably. But Berlo, I mean, even this show, I mean, you may have never met your wife if it wasn't for this show.
If you want to get technical, you would have to go back to the first podcast we were on.
Well,
that's what pushed it.
Well, I mean, you had met Isabel before. However, mm-hmm. we started hanging out, and when I started dating Alex, and she started coming around, and we hung out a little bit. And then Alex kind of, you know, almost had a hand in kind of setting you two lovebirds up, and now you're hitched and on your way, and... So really, you owe your entire life to this podcast.
All right, fine. If I have a child, I'll name him Scott Verbal Shenanigans Berlo, okay? Are you happy?
I mean, I think Shenanigans would be a better first name.
Well, I want the kid to have somewhat a chance in school to not get destroyed.
Is Joey here? Here. Is Tom here? Here. Is Shenanigans Berlew here? But here we go. Let's get Tom Wopat on the line, everybody.
All right, we're on. Let's rock.
Awesome, man. I like your style. I like jumping around. First off, Tom, thank you. Thanks so much for giving us a few minutes on the show here. It really is a pleasure to talk to you, so thank you.
You're welcome.
So where are we calling at? Where are you living these days?
I'm on the Upper West Side, Manhattan, in New York City.
Oh, so you're not far from me. I'm right in kind of like North Jersey right now. So,
oh, cool. We're in North Jersey.
I'm in Denville, so like kind of by Parsippany over there.
I have a cabin in West Milford.
Oh man, so come on over. We'll have a beer.
Yeah, it's like a mile and a half from Greenwood Lake.
Oh, yeah, you're not far at all.
Oh wow.
So Tom, you are. Looking back at your career, you've been in the entertainment world for quite a long time, whether it's music or acting. Is there one thing that is your true passion, or do you kind of see yourself as like a Renaissance man that could do a little bit of everything?
Well, I would have to say that singing is the thing that is the most comfortable for me. I mean, I've gotten to the point where I'm comfortable with acting both on stage and in front of the camera, but the singing thing has always been kind of the driver of a lot of everything else.
I mean, when you were growing up, I know you've gone from rock and country and back. Is that just your upbringing, or was it just something where you wanted to kind of stretch things and try different music styles?
Well, you know, back when I was listening to the radio when I was a kid, I mean, the radio station top 40 would be Frank Sinatra, Beatles, you know, some Motown thing, some R&B thing, you know, Andy Williams. It would be a mixture of everything. So the genres weren't really broken up. I mean, top 40 was a mess of everything.
Right.
And so, I mean, I enjoyed all of it. I had a horn band back in the 70s before I came to New York. And then once Dukes got going, I started making country records, and I had a country band for a while in L.A. and then about 10 years in Nashville. But then when I came here to do And Get Your Gun, then I started doing some of the American Songbook stuff. And now I'm actually kind of gone back to singer-songwriter things. Like the most recent album, the Wopat album, is actually almost half of original tunes.
Yeah, I saw you recently tweeting about it and the album that came out. Now, are your origins, were you a kid who took guitar lessons? Did you take piano lessons?
No, not really. I mean, I had a couple of piano lessons, but I bought a guitar from a catalog. I bought a guitar in the mail. And, I mean, I think you could probably make the case that 90% of the musicians and entertainers from my era got started because of the Beatles.
Right.
Because it looked like and sounded like so much fun. And indeed it is.
Now, you came from a big family up in Wisconsin. What kind of gave you the bug to try to be like a big time entertainer?
Well, I mean, my first desire was to be a Green Bay Packer. I thought I was going to be a running back for the Packers. I was on the freshman team at the UW in 69 at University of Wisconsin for about a month until I tore up a knee. But I never really thought about it too much until I had been in a couple of productions in college. And finally had a guy who said, you know what, I mean, if you really wanted to do this, you could probably do this. So he took me, and I did an audition for an opera producer down in Houston, and he said I had a nice little voice. And I said, well, then I think I'm going to be a musical comedy guy, you know, and do musicals and go to New York. And unfortunately, I mean, my friend that kind of hooked me up out of the university, I mean, he introduced me to a really fine director who I've worked with a couple of times since then. And I came to New York and I got some interviews with a couple of different cast or agents. I got an agent that way. So I had an agent within a couple of months of getting to New York, and I was on Broadway in a lead role within 6 months.
So, I mean, I got, as a huge Dukes fan, I got to get into the career and the show and all. I mean, out of curiosity, you've done enough of these interviews and podcasts. Is there any time where you're just sitting back going, please don't ask me about the Dukes. Please don't ask me about the Dukes.
Well, I mean, that would be kind of foolish. It's obviously, it's one of those things. And to be honest with you, I mean, if you're going to be famous for something, I mean, the Dukes of Hazzard is not the worst thing.
Absolutely.
You can make a case on the East Coast here that I'm probably known almost as much for my Broadway stuff as I am for Dukes. But, you know, I do a lot of personal appearances with the car and sign autographs and take pictures and blah, blah, blah. But what it also does, it helps me get in the door to bring a guitar and do like a little concert and that kind of thing too. So it's always been, it works both ways. You know, you'd like to think that you might not just be known for one thing, right. But if you're going to be known for one thing, Luke Duke ain't bad.
Absolutely. So, Let's go right to like the beginning. You know, like you're pretty young and doing your acting career. So was John. When you guys got the role, did you immediately kind of like try to get together and mesh up and gain chemistry, or was it just like you met on?
It just happened. It happened immediately. And actually, he's like 9 years younger than I am, so he was just out of high school, and I had a lot more experience, but. You know, as far as television goes, neither one of us had any experience, but it really worked. I mean, it's such a foolish show in a lot of ways that, you know, it's kind of foolproof. And, but we had, you know, we both have a certain amount of attitude, and it seemed to really work. And we always enjoyed each other's sense of humor. And of course, if you have Catherine around, that's another sense of humor that, just really an amazing thing to deal with.
So a little background. So Mike here, it's kind of been a thing over the podcast for the last 4 or 5 years where we bring up the Dukes of Hazzard all the time. Mike grew up watching the show. We had the pleasure of having John on about 2 years ago. And this is kind of like the rounding it out to get the final, puzzle piece into the podcast here. So it's pretty cool to be able to gift this to Mike over there. But when you and John are, you're first getting these roles, you're the show's, you know, I'm sure you had no idea what, if the show was going to be a hit or not. Are you guys like, are you going in with the attitude like, hey, this is going to be something huge? Or was it like, I don't know, we're going to film these things and kind of just see what happens?
I think we both kind of dealt with it like it was going to be fun.
Right.
You got to remember that was right after like Smokey and the Bandit.
Yeah.
And that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And it was, you know, a real page out of that book. So it was like and actually, to be honest with you, once they started showing it in January of 79, it was a hit. It didn't take any time at all. I mean, it was it kind of debuted in the top 20. It was ridiculous. But it was a lot of fun, you know. What the heck? Yeah. We had a good time, and you know, we went through some changes with Warner Brothers over the years, but all in all, I thought that we had a great time. The cast was tight. Everybody's remained friends. It's a good bunch.
Well, I mean, it's kind of amazing that how it starts in the 70s, and here we are in 2020 talking about the show. I mean, from your kind of perspective, why do you feel it's still like in the hearts of so many people still to this day?
Well, it's iconic. I mean, and you know, you can kind of parse things any way you want to figure out why something's iconic. But I think that it was always a little bit of a fantasy. It kind of was contemporary, but not really at the time.
Right.
It was like a Western, but it was a Southern, and with a car rather than horses. And, you know, the thing is, too, is you have a family the family unit was super important. And then even the bad guys, even the guys that we dealt with, like Boss and Roscoe, if they got into trouble, we would help them out because they were still, you know, part of our community, and we looked out for them, too. So it was one of those things for me. A show like that is like the Andy Griffith Show. The performances are excellent. The chemistry is fucking magical. And there's no sex. There's no blood. There's no cussing. You know, it's amusing. And in our case, it, with the vehicular violence and just the fast pace of the of the editing of the show, it was unique. It was the first of its kind, really.
Now, while the show is going on and it's massively successful, it had a long run, are you still playing music during that time and writing your music, or did that take a kind of a back burner?
Well, John really started first making records, but I got into it pretty quick. I think the first one I made was 82, and that would have been 2 or 3 years into the show. But I was always playing the whole time. Any of those pictures from the first few sessions where there's a guitar in the picture, it's my guitar.
Wow.
That's what Schneider noticed first, was my guitar, not me. So it, it was always a big part of things. And, I mean, for me, music is something I can control.
Right.
And, like, these days, I've had several recording contracts and never made a cent. And then about 15 years ago, I made my first record that I produced myself. And all of a sudden, lo and behold, I started making money and making records. So I've made like 5 cents. and it's a labor of love. It's something that I really enjoy to do. And
for sure.
I live in New York City, so I have like the best musicians in the world here.
Yeah.
No matter what kind of music you're doing.
Now, when that whole debacle happened where they replaced you two and brought in Coy Vance, did you have any thoughts about not coming back and concentrating on music?
Not really. We kind of figured it was something that would get resolved, especially since both of us left and the show took a really bad hit ratings-wise as soon as we left. You know, it was never quite the same when we got back, but some things... You know, we got a couple of fresh writers. I ended up directing a half a dozen episodes, and John directed one. You know, the last couple of years were still fun, but, you know, we kind of peed in our backyard a little bit. So that doesn't work out the best. We sued them for $25 million. They sued us for $200 million. And then at the end of 16 shows, we just said, well, never mind. it was a learning experience. And the thing was, I think one of the things that actors reacted to was that we went out together.
Right.
And that was the first time that anybody had done that. I mean, people had left shows, mm-hmm. but always by themselves. So this was the first time that the two leads exited together.
That's awesome.
I don't know if it was better or worse. But anyway, it was a lot of fun. The show was, and I still enjoy talking with fans about it and stuff. I'm not quite as deep into it as John is.
Right.
You know, he's got his place down in Louisiana, and it's like Duke's heaven down there. But, you know, I appreciate it. And I appreciate the fans' appreciation and their, you know, the devotion that they've showed to the show over all these years. And it's
yeah.
You know, it's one of those things. It'll be going on long after I'm gone. So,
So you obviously after Dukes, the acting continues, and you go on to a bunch of minor roles and all different things from Smallville to Phineas and Ferb or your voice. But I did want to ask you, you got a role in Django Unchained. How did
that? That was awesome.
That is really awesome. And how did that come about? And what was working with Tarantino like?
Well, there's actually a backstory to that, and this is going to be my parting shot. This story. Tarantino, when he was a teenager, he studied with James Best, who played Roscoe on the show. Mm-hmm. He studied acting up in Burbank. So he would take the bus up to Burbank, and he'd go to Jim's class. And then Jim would let him sleep in the classroom afterwards, spend the night there. And then he would come to Warner Brothers the next day and hang out on the set.
Right.
So, unbeknownst to us, I mean, Quentin Tarantino, when he was 18 or 19, was hanging around our set. So he knew me from that.
Wow.
And there's also a gal who does some casting, does like extras at casting for him. And she was somebody that I knew from the show. And just the kind of, they asked me if I wanted to audition for that part. And since that part is just like, it's kind of a one-note samba. I basically coming out there and telling them we're going to hang the motherfucker, and then he comes up. Actually, you owe me some money. And it's a joke. It's a minute and a half, a 2 minute setup for a joke. And so basically, for the audition, I just dressed up pretty much exactly like what I wore for the scene, and they dug it, and we shot it in one day. It was great. It was the most fun I'd had probably since Dukes.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's epic.
There's another film that I did since then. I did a film for the Inspiration Network, which is a network where you can't cuss, which is very interesting for a movie set. And I did a movie called County Line, and that was really terrific. That was a lot of fun. I was a hero again, you know. I drove a car and rode a motorcycle and had a fist fight and shot a gun and blah, 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 blah. So it was a gas. So I've gotten to do a lot of fun stuff, and there's more fun stuff coming, I'm sure. I just did an episode of Adam's Secretary. That was just on like a couple months ago.
Oh, nice. What did you play?
In their final season. So I still get a whack at TV now and then.
That's awesome.
Well, I don't care. I mean, you had a lot of roles. You're obviously talented. You got nominated for a Tony Award. When you came off the show with Dukes, was there ever fear of typecasting, or did you face any of that?
Well, you know, the problem with that, I mean, you can say all you want about whether you're afraid of it or, you know, resent it or whatever. I mean, it is what it is. Fortunately for me, I'd already been on Broadway. So shortly after Dukes was over, I got shots back at the Broadway stage. And within a couple of years, I was back on Broadway doing leads. So that kind of takes you out of that kind of thing a little bit. Having said that, then when Annie Get Your Gun comes along and they need to cast me as a cowboy, it kind of fit pretty good.
Right.
Anyway, listen, you guys, I got a ball game I got to watch, but it's been a pleasure talking to you. I hope you got something here you can use.
Tom, really, thank you so much, and we appreciate the time. We appreciate the reschedule, and it was a real pleasure talking to you, man. Thank you so much.
No worries,
on
man.
Our channel,
talk to you soon. Take care.
Take care, pal. Bye. All right, Mike. So, I mean, you're pretty much in my debt now, I think, for the next couple years or so, you know. I'm going to get Boss Hogg on next, and it's going to be...
That might be hard.
You listen, I've been working on things, okay? Remember we talked to that exorcist? Okay. I got the exorcist and the cryonics guy on the line, okay? And they're working for me. They're working for me. The brief sponsorship money we had for like 2 months has gone to pay. Boss Hogg is ready to go, man. And
Oh, okay.
So
Yeah, I would have told you to put that money in stock, but okay. I mean, if you want to go that route.
Scott, what did you invest in? Bringing Boss Hogg back for Michael?
Didn't Berlew quit the show 2 weeks before you got him? Yeah, stop reminding me.
He's been begging to come back, but I'm not letting it happen. But Tom Wopat, man. Tom Wopat. Didn't you say, I remember you had asked John about it. Didn't you say there was like an episode about aliens or something like that?
Yeah, there was an episode of the Dukes where this like tiny little green alien, it kind of looked like, what's the one from the Flintstones?
Gazoo?
Gazoo, yeah. It kind of looked like that. And like all the Duke boys were trying to do was prevent this alien from getting into like other people's hands. And like at one point the alien came up and it like popped up like Gazoo, and like both of them like, oh, look at that little green guy. And no, and they're like, we got to run.
So clearly it was your favorite episode.
Yeah. I believe the term is jumping the shark. That was probably the episode in question.
Is that before or after they brought the other Dukes in?
I'm almost positive it's after, because okay. It like sounds like the end. Kind of stuff where they were like when they were kind of just like trying to pull stuff out of their rear end to keep the vibe going. Because there was like the whole thing, like you said, where they tried Coin Vance and the ratings went down. They also got a lot of people ticked off because they were using little toys instead of actually jumping a car, which ticked people off. It would just be a close-up of a toy, and everybody's like, that's not the General Lee.
Well, buddy. So
it kind of sounds like their desperation show.
Well, I mean, it's pretty damn cool. We got Luke and Bo on the show, so another mark on the timeline of the podcast here. So yeah. very.
We can't talk to Daisy since that restraining orders you put on me. I'm sorry, everybody in the audience.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we got to work around your legal problems. So the one and only Tom Wopat. All right, Tom Wopat, Mike. Something to cross off the bucket list there.
Absolutely, I think there's about 3 or 4 regular cast members of the Dukes you still got to get me, and then we'll start working on the A-team.
Oh, man, Mr. T, that would be an awesome interview.
I was a Howling Mad Murdoch guy myself.
You would Dwight be. Schultz. You would be.
Yeah, he was awesome, man. Howling Mad. I mean, he was always nuts doing different stuff. The wild card. We talked about this before.
You identify with the wild card.
Absolutely.
So you don't see Mr. T as the wild card in that equation?
Nah, he's just the muscle.
All right. So you, Charlie Kelly, Howling Mad, yeah, you know, you guys are all wild cards. You unite. Luke. No, Bo.
Absolutely.
Bo. Yeah, Bo. Yeah.
I would say, Scott, if you can arrange the four of us to get together, have like a dinner sometime, I feel the conversation would be great. We'll have you there just to hold the microphone and everything.
What if we do an episode called the Wild Card episode where we just have the four of you talking about how wild you are and, you know.
Four wild cards getting together seeing who's the wildest. I don't, might get sticky, my friend. I don't know.
So, yeah, that's cool. So I was watching my niece the other day, and you know, like we were at their house, and you know, she was hungry and had a snack, and like this, her snacks were like all these like healthy options, gluten free, like all these everything free, sodium free, blah blah blah, like. And she would eat, she had like cut up fuit and things like that. And I don't know. It made me think, it's amazing. I don't know about you. It's amazing that we're alive. I think we lived through the worst time in human history in American history for food in like the late 80s, early 90s, where everything just got condensed down into some processed thing or some microwavable thing. Like, before that, the technology wasn't really there to make those things, so a lot of people cooked, and they didn't really have expendable money and things like that. So they did cook and grew things, and then all of a sudden everything came in packages and was sweets, and like I started to think about my old like lunches and snacks and things like that. I don't know if you are on the same page as me, but not good nutritious stuff, that's for sure.
No, yeah, that was definitely around the time where they figured, I think the 80s was the best time for the, oh, we can replace sugar with that, before we found out what the hell it did to our bodies long ago. I mean, I still remember the old 80s Tab commercials where like all the women were like, ooh, I don't want to gain weight, give me a Tab, you know?
I remember so much. We were talking about this. I remember my parents we'd always have like the 2-liter Pepsi bottle, the caffeine-free one, though, of course. But it was always for dinner. There was a bottle of soda. Like, I don't even drink soda. The only time I ever have soda is, like, at a wedding sometimes where it's, like, a Jack and Coke or something like that. And I don't even like the taste of it, really. And I just remember everything was – every day for lunch, it was a sandwich. Mm-hmm. A lot of times that sandwich got smashed in my backpack. And it was, like, flat by the time I get it. And it was always accompanied by, as I got older, it was a Snapple. And if you look at the Snapple, it's like 800 milligrams of sugar.
Easily.
And then it was accompanied by a Little Debbie snack cake of some sort.
Mm.
Like zebra cakes, the cosmic brownies, the Christmas trees, there was like a strawberry shortcake.
Star Crunch.
Star Crunch. It was always like, okay, take one of them, slap it in the bag, and they're off. Like, that is the worst lunch imaginable.
I'm trying to say mine was a PB&J, Fritos barbecue corn chips.
Oh, nice, nice.
So, like 8 billion grams of sodium.
had to get your corn in, though. That's a vegetable, right?
I guess technically. let's see. There was grapes. That was usually the go-to fruit. Sometimes it would be a package of raisins, but I hated raisins. I think I even told the story on the podcast here once before. This is a while ago where, like, I remember when we moved to Jersey, like, I'm in the second or third grade, and, like, where I was at, we had no concept of snack time.
Okay.
So, I remember, like, the first day of school, the teacher's like, okay, snack time, and I didn't get the concept, so I ate my entire lunch, and then when like lunch came to find everybody's eating, the only thing that was left was a box of raisins, which I couldn't stand, so I'm just sitting there crying, staring at this small package of raisins. I didn't know I wasn't supposed to eat yet.
You push it all in too early, man. You were probably like, snack time is awesome.
That's what I was like. Like, the teachers look at me like, Mike, are you eating your lunch? Yeah, everybody else see what we're supposed to do. Leave it till later? I digest.
As if somehow there would be like a regenerated lunch in your bag when you went to lunch.
Maybe if I think really hard, I'll remember I had a second lunch somewhere. But, yeah, what else?
Ecto Cooler.
I didn't have Ecto. I would have Capri Suns, and it would take like 10 snaps to try to get that damn thing through. Sometimes you go right through it.
I can't tell you how many times I went through the back of the Capri Sun, and then I have to drink it in some weird, like, put the bag in between both lips and suck through the small hole that you made.
You try to make it work, you push it, and then it gets all over your face.
Yep.
It's always terrible.
One time my niece asked me to open her Capri Sun, and I was like, I got this. Like, it was redemption time as an adult. I'm like, this can't be that hard. Sure enough, I got to poke it through, and it's hanging out the back of the bag. I'm like, oh, man. I still fail.
Those things have to come with a steak knife because those straws do not work whatsoever. I'm trying to think. Oh, not in my lunch, but I remember like the go-to snack. We had the discount Hostess store within distance of the house, and I would always get like those Hostess fruit pies, which it's like, oh, it's fruit.
Yeah, there's fruit in it.
There's no way in the world there was ever a real piece of fruit in those things. Yeah. And all you know, like the blueberries and the apples were made in some lab somewhere. But you just think, this is good fruit pie.
When we grew up, the consumer was still tricked. Like everything was like, oh, okay, caffeine free. Let's have five glasses of soda. There's no caffeine. You know, like we were still being hoaxed and we were okay with it.
Yeah, but I grew up when fat-free started, and everybody got demolished by that. Like, you're just eating, like, two boxes of cupcake. It's fat-free! I can eat all I want! There's no fat in it! I can't possibly get fat with so much fat in it!
I remember just these little Debbie cakes, the zebra cakes. They were the white ones. It was like a chocolate drizzle. And I remember always going to school, not liking them that much. And my backpack, you know, would get thrown around. And it would just smash these things into a million pieces. And I remember, like, having to eat them and opening them. And there would just be zebra cake shrapnel, like, all over the lunch table. And I remember just not liking them at all. And, like, picking, like, pieces of yellow cake up and eating them. And then I remember my brother liked bologna. I couldn't stand bologna. And every once in a while, you know, the sandwiches would get mixed up. And I don't like mayo either. And he would like bologna and mayo. And I would sit there and have to eat, like, miserably eat this sandwich. Like, I don't even like bologna. And just, you know, be like, I got my brother's sandwich again. You know, like, just terribly. Just what an awful. My mom used to make us fried bologna. Like, she used to be like, come on in, kids. We're going to have fried bologna. Like, on a cold day. I remember on Saturdays, like, in a snowstorm, she'd be like, oh, I'll make you guys some fried bologna. And somehow that was good.
It's one thing. I mean, I can eat anything. For some reason, I never have an instinct whatsoever to eat fried bologna. I keep on hearing how great it is, but it's just something. It's like, I know if I eat it, I'll be fine. But for some reason, my brain is like, no, you can't go for it. It's kind of like for, like, the longest time, I remember, like, I wouldn't eat a bagel.
Really?
And I couldn't. Yeah, there was no rhyme or reason. I think one reason was because my parents would get onion bagels. And when I was younger, I didn't like onions, even though there's there's no way in the world Lenders gets fresh onions and puts it in their bagels before they freeze it.
What are you talking about? You never saw the commercials with the onions are just melting on top of the dough. Like, totally real.
And they have that professional baker in his own. It's like, we get the freshest ingredients to make Lenders bagels. But, like, for years, I refused to eat bagels and all. And I think it probably took about 3 years before my family, they're like, just lick the cream cheese. And then I took a bite. And...
just lick the cream cheese. Mom, can I have
your... All right, I'm going to do this, but I'm not eating this bagel. I'm telling you that much.
Mom, can I lick the cream cheese off your bagel? Yeah, man, I don't know, man. I just, it's amazing we're not all dead by 30 years old with some of the food that was passed our way. But we're not dead, and we are keeping this podcast rolling here. But I think Berlo, you know, we'll keep it short and sweet. We'll let Tom Wopat rest in infamy here and not overdo it. So I think, Berlo, anything to promote before we go?
Well, the Dukes of Hazzard was originally taped down here in Georgia, and if you live down here in Georgia or nearby Alabama and you need to find a home, call my realtor, Dawn M. Smethy. She sold many houses up in New Jersey. She's brought her talents down here, friendly, works great with everybody, really a hard worker who will find you the perfect house that fits your needs. If you're interested, you can email her. She's at d.smethy@cbbullard.com or call her at 770-254-0079.
Yeah, plus Mike needs an intern, so if you want to move down to Georgia and Michael is looking for someone to, you know, to help him stroke his ego, to organize his NASCAR stuff, to
It does get disorganized, my NASCAR stuff. I will admit that. That's a tough job.
Well, maybe you should stop playing with it at this point. Like, you got to let it just sit and be displayed instead of having your, like, little Dukes of Hazzard reenactments and whatnot. So,
Scott, I'm a man. I'll do what I want.
So just email us at intern@verbalshenanigans at gmail.com. But I will promote a friend's a fellow podcast that's kind of back. They're not a new podcast, but they have returned after about a 6 month hiatus or so.
They're like a phoenix.
Yeah, yeah. They were hibernating. And that is our good friends, great comedians Joe Fernandez and Mike Gaffney. It's called the All in Our Heads podcast. They kind of relaunched last week, and they're back. This is a very funny podcast. They really kind of just talk about life and things that are bothering them, and just a good podcast to support, so go check them out. So, guys, that is our time. What you can do for us is check us out on all the different platforms we're on. We're on every single, like, podcast platform. We're on one today that I found called Pod Knife. That's how cool we are.
Wow.
Yeah. But a little announcement. We are now on Spotify, Mike. We are on Spotify. So, if you're – I use Spotify for all my music, so – if you do like I do, you could also go look up Verbal Shenanigans. We are on there. You could follow us on there, and it comes right to your phone. So it's pretty cool. We are also on the BS Podcast Network, Discovery County Network, ComingRightUp.org, and Denville Radio. So there's a lot of other podcasts to support on those various platforms. So go check us out. Most importantly, leave us a review on iTunes. That's really the best you can do. Second best. The first best you can do is share the episodes with your friends and family and daughters and grandmas and stuff like that and say, hey, listen to this. You'll love it. It's Tom Wopat. Come on. So check him out. Oh, man. I thought that thing had gone away. But are you going to be buried in a Confederate flag casket? Like, is that...
with wheels, just in case. You know, if, like, Boss Hogg tries to capture my corpse, I got to be ready to get out of there, you know?
Well, guys, tonight was another great episode. We love doing it. I want to thank Tom Wopat for coming on. And that's it, guys. Life is funny. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. Bye-bye. I hate my co-host.
Just a good old boy, never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw. Been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curves, flattening the hills. Someday the mountain might get them, but the law never will. Making their way, the only way they know how. That's just a little bit more than the law will allow. Just a good old boy, wouldn't change if they could. Fighting the system like a two modern day Robin Hood.